Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
I don't know if you've ever noticed it when you've been to my house, but in the window that you're looking at the front, when you stand at the front door, there's a little figure of the Queen, which was originally bought by one of the kids. I can't remember, you know, how many years ago, quite a number of years ago. And it was a kind of cliche figure of the Queen bought at the kind of gift shop.
She was solar powered, isn't it?
Well, and that's the thing. She, you know, she was this lady in kind of stout tweeds and so forth, with a distinctive hairstyle, carrying a large handbag, and inside the handbag was a kind of cell which would respond to the sun's rays. And so the idea of this figure was that you'd, you know, you get sufficient solar power to power this figure in doing the only thing that it was required to do, which was to wave with one of its hands. And so the kids got this as it's a bit of a joke, it's a bit of an affectionate joke, you know, give this to mum and dad. And so this ended up in the front window, which is where it got the most sun. And, you know, the postman would comment upon it, the milkman would comment upon it, you know. And we've had this for so long, you know. Eventually, people we met down the road go, oh, you're the people with the figure of the Queen.
With the waving Queen.
And it's only a tiny thing, you know. It's not enormous. It wouldn't draw your attention across the street, you know. But anyway, we've had it for so long that at one stage, the kind of battery ran down. I think we got it replaced, you know what I mean? Because we felt we had to have it. We had certainly had it for longer than 10 years. You know, probably getting on for 20, one way or another. And over the last few years, couple of years, I've said to Alison from time to time, we're going to have to take that down.
Yeah, what are we going to do? When?
Because one day, she won't be there. And what are you going to do? Are you going to take it down that day or the day after? Or are you going to leave it there? You know, I felt that we ought to sort of anticipate it. By
so in light of yesterday's events, we're recording this on the Friday. What's your decision?
Well, there is no decision. I mean, you know, Alison and I have barely had time to talk about it because we're not going to have a serious summit meeting about it at all. But it's just a really odd thing because it's a kind of jokey representation of the fact that she and I, like you, have never known a world without the Queen.
No,
you
no.
know, she's just, you know, I was talking to somebody about it yesterday, and I said, well, actually, in a sense, it's the most significant event of my lifetime. It's unique. There is no precedent.
It's interesting how even people who seem to be weren't remotely monarchists, in fact, were possibly anti the monarchy, even they, friends of mine, have been suggesting that they too are somewhat moved by this because they didn't realise what an extraordinarily strong emotional bond that's been. One of the constant presence in our entire life.
But it's the idea of the constant presence, and it also, you know, because I was actually born, I think George VI was still on the throne when I was born, but he died, you know, he must have died early 52, I think. And, you know, so she became the Queen in 62 and coronation 53.
She was the coronation, but she became the Queen in 52.
Yeah. And, you know, and so she's just been this symbolic presence, but also for people like you and me, a kind of link with our parents' generation.
Completely. That I really miss. Both my parents have passed away, and I was thinking last night, as I'm sure so many people would, how much I'd love to talk to them right now.
Talk to absolutely.
I would love to have rung them up and said, "Oh, the old queen."
Absolutely.
I got this. My two of my elder sisters were texting me last night, and they were my eldest sister, who was born in 1947, so she's, what does that make her? She's 75. She can still remember, she can't remember George VI, but she can remember, she would have been just about five, when the door burst open, and I suppose it would have been February 52, and a neighbour came running in and said, "The king is dead." And what an extraordinary moment that. She can still vividly remember that. So she said, I feel really quite moved by this whole thing. And when we were talking about, one of the traditions in our house, and maybe lots of others actually, were that on Christmas Day, you always had the Queen's speech. Did you used to have that on the telly?
Definitely.
And that was a really big part of the furniture. You know, you'd open your presents, there'd be the stockings and this and the other. Go out and see people, but he had to come back and sort of. And from an early age, I mean, I never used to pay a huge amount of attention, but as it being part of the framework of Christmas, it was an incredibly important thing. And I look back at all the decades of my life, and there she is in the background.
Absolutely.
It's extraordinary.
And the link to your parents is interesting because, you know, they served in. You know, I'm assuming your parents both served in the Second World War.
Second World War, yeah.
And, you know, as did mine and grandparents, probably First World War and so forth. And so they were very aware of their relationship with king and country, were they? And then queen and country. And I wouldn't. My dad would pretty much stand up when the national anthem was played. And he wasn't a wildly formal person or anything. And I was thinking about this morning. You know, all this
as
stuff
it used to be played in cinemas. Do you remember that?
This is it. This
we
is
used
it.
To go to the Empire and all the shot.
Not just cinemas. If you went to see the Beatles in 1964, they were playing the national anthem at the end of it. You know? And that would go on for quite a lot longer than that. You know, there was a kind of formality to life, which was a lot of it related to the royal family. And, you know, when we were getting ready to record this morning, and obviously this only happened yesterday, Alex said, you know, Alex is away, and Alex said, "What's the mood in London?" And I said, "Well, I've really no idea, you know, because I was out last night, and then I came home, and, you know, and here we are." But I think what the mood in London is right now is neither here nor there, because what will happen over the next few weeks is I think this stuff will just steal over people. You know what I mean? That the absence of what had been a presence all through your life is going to only slowly occur to you in loads and loads of different ways.
It will, because it's so much part of the fabric of our lives, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And just in terms of the events of the last few days, if you were born on Tuesday of this week, then today, in your entire lifetime, you will already have known two prime ministers and two monarchs. Pretty astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw any of the broadcast, but I was out at lunchtime, so I didn't know anything about it. I got back and my wife Claire said to me, "Look, this thing about the Queen, you know, obviously, I get the impression she may have died, you know." So I turned on the TV and it was one of those great bits of broadcasting, actually, where Nicholas Witchell, the rather ghastly, and the very, very fantastic Hugh Edwards, God, I think he's brilliant. Hugh Edwards had arrived at the BBC. He hadn't when I first turned it on, but he suddenly appeared in a black suit with a white shirt and a black tie. And all the presenters that appeared or reappeared subsequently all were wearing black clothes. And that's usually a significant indication that something fairly monumental has happened. And I was there at the junction, watching at the junction, which must be about 6:30 in the evening, when he announced the news, before they went to all the networks, actually. And it was amazing. He said something like, "Well, here we are." He said something like, "Awaiting news, either of medical improvement or perhaps the fact that she has failed to survive." And that was the first time anyone had mentioned the idea that this might be, you know, that might be the extent of this event. And at that point, there was a break and it cut to him in vision. And he said, "We have an announcement from Buckingham Palace that the Queen Elizabeth II has passed away or whatever. And it was an absolutely amazing piece of TV. It was absolutely electrifying, as were various moments. Liz Truss made a speech. I mean, a really appallingly bad speech, actually, I thought. I mean, just how she can't have found speechwriters to produce something of a higher quality and more substance, that I don't know. But she made that speech, and she made that speech live on all four of the channels. I flicked across just to check. BBC One, Two, ITV, BBC and Channel 4, all showing that live. You're thinking, on your second day at work, that's pretty fantastic, isn't it? You've got to make a speech, which is something you're not particularly used to in those kind of circumstances, to all four channels live simultaneously. So it was kind of gripping to watch, actually. And then more and more indications. There was a thing about the Eiffel Tower. I was into this one. The Eiffel Tower at midnight last night turned out all the lights as a mark of respect. I think that's on an enormous international scale. Well,
you see, there's the other thing. That's what I mean about things will only slowly occur to you. It only occurred to me this morning, walking upstairs, carrying a cup of tea. That's the death of the most famous person in the world.
I think probably, yeah.
It is.
I couldn't think that there was anyone. There is no equivalent, is there?
Yeah. You know, that famous on a stamp for 70 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And known internationally.
Yeah.
And recognised internationally.
And everyone has an opinion about
it. There is no equivalent of that, you know. And then, now going back to your business of the announcement, and, you know, like when I used to do a radio programme on GLR in the 90s, there used to be a box in every BBC studio up and down the country, a box of records, and it used to say on the side of it, "Music for a solemn occasion."
Yeah, yeah.
And when you opened it, there would be a bunch of classical records in there, and then there would be a memo that would explain what you had to do if there was any indication that this kind of thing was going to happen. And the reason that they had that is that the previous death of a sovereign had been 1952. And in 1952, there were only three radio stations. There was the Home Service, the Light Programme, and the third programme. That's what there was. So the BBC could easily control the, you know, communication of any kind of message of national importance. Subsequently, you had millions and millions, increase in proliferation of outlets. And therefore, the BBC was haunted by the idea that somebody on BBC Radio Leicester might go off the reservation and, you know, announce something before it had happened, which would be terribly embarrassing. And so the arrangement was always, you do not announce this ever. This goes to a central point.
That's right. And we all go over to all
the director general decides, you know, yeah. And it's Hugh Evers or it's whoever it is.
Whereas, in fact, Hugh Evers did announce it on BBC One before the official announcement, which is quite interesting, really. But go on, yeah.
Well, okay, but he probably, okay, maybe
seconds
not
before
use the actual formal words. But, you know, that they then, in the 90s, they expected that to happen in the case of the death of the Queen Mother. But, of course, Diana died before. And so, you know, all those...
Yeah, they used that format, didn't they? Was just immediately applied to her thing. And yeah. I turned on Radio 2 this morning just to check, and sure enough, somber but stirring orchestral music.
Well,
I'm sure all day.
It's going to be interesting to see, because, I mean, not that I remember George the Sixth dying, but, you know, the theatre's closed. You know, there was barely any TV in 1952 anyway. You know what I mean? Everything was just completely gone into mourning. Whereas, you know, I came home on the tube last night and you would never have known.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, they've cancelled last night the proms, which to me seems absolutely extraordinary. I mean, obviously it's the BBC and the BBC is super, super conscious of doing the right thing. But, I mean, last night the proms is the one event that I would have thought that would
Yeah, maybe. When is it? Is it supposed to be this weekend?
I think it's either tonight, Friday, or Saturday.
It's always on Saturday night. There's supposed to be a meeting this morning to decide whether Premier League football
and the cricket
just go along. go ahead and, you know, there's going to be some sort of period of mourning, and I don't know when the date of the funeral is. And
been some lovely things written, though. Lovely
it's the
things.
First state funeral since Churchill. That's right, is it?
That's right.
The times. And do you remember Churchill's funeral?
I remember Churchill's funeral really vividly. At school, we all stopped. I mean, unless I've got this completely wrong, I've got
he had
it in my
a day
head,
off.
It was about 11:30 in the morning, and I can just remember we came to Washington. We had black and white television, so I can remember that the Union Jack didn't really look like a Union Jack, but I can still remember the coffin with the flag over. I remember the whole thing, though. The school, we all watched it. We thought we were very thrilled. Actually, it was just great to not be doing double geography. You know,
immensely exciting.
Really good.
Churchill's funeral.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There was a lovely thing by, just so many nice things written, a lovely thing by Helen Lewis in The Atlantic, talking about how old she was. She's really, she said she was 6 weeks older than Marilyn Monroe, 3 years older than Anne Frank, 9 years older than Elvis Presley, all figures from an unreachable past. She was older than nylon, scotch tape and The Hobbit. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because that's, you know, 90, it's, how old was she? 96 years. It's astonishing.
96.
Yeah.
96.
Some great friends of her with David Attenborough, too, who are exactly the same age.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's the symbolic side. You know, going back to my little figurine in the front window, it's the idea that she was something that, you know, not even Paul McCartney is. And not even David Attenborough is, which was a symbol as well as a person.
Yeah.
Actually, the symbol more important than the person. You know, the symbol in the shape of, you know, not this grand regal figure or anything like that. Not Henry VIII, not George III, not Victoria. The symbol of the monarchy was this little woman, you know, wearing a barber with a large handbag, you know. Going round places.
A horsey headscarf.
A horsey headscarf. And I always used to think the great thing about the Queen and the thing that kept her, and we, of course, we call her the Queen, the Americans call her Queen Elizabeth as if there's another one. You know, we just think the Queen. Was the fact that she managed to look magnificently, heroically bored in everything she was doing. And I really liked that about her, that she treated absolutely every occasion, whether it was the derby, which she probably really wanted to be at, or opening some kind of public lavatory.
I think that was a deliberate thing. Because
it is.
I was watching Giles Brandreth last night, who's really good speaker. Oh, really? He's just incredible because everything he does is wrapped up with some kind of really warm human anecdote. He tells stories. He doesn't just have conjecture and opinion. And he was talking about going to the theatre with the Queen, who he obviously seems to know quite well, and Prince William. And they're watching, they had to watch about, it was a kind of variety show. And I think there were about 10 or 12 acts. And he said that she clapped for exactly the same length of time for each act. And she'd occasionally give him a sideways look, which indicated what her feelings might be about that particular act, either enthusiastic or otherwise. But she actually said to him, she felt it would be wrong to give any impression that she liked one act more than another. So that idea of looking heroically bored I think is exactly the same concept.
It is.
You know, I mean, that's why there are clips of her at the races going completely mental when one of her horses and then, of course, then people twist that into kind of, that's all she cares about. She only gets excited about horse racing and everything else is there. No, that's not true. She was just being really diplomatic. But you're right, as a symbol. You know, even if you didn't approve of her, you understood that, you know, what she represented was some kind of kindness and philanthropy and civility. And all those things are just immensely valuable.
But also, the most important thing she represented, by virtue of the fact that she lived so long, was continuity.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's going to be really odd.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that's going to be odd to deal with.
I know. And there are just going to be...
That figure is not going to be humming along in the background as she has been all our lives.
And yeah, we're going to have to sing God Save Our Gracious King at some point, which seems extraordinary.
I mean, that's
that doesn't
weird.
That seem weird?
That's going to be weird. Or
send him victorious.
The stamps are going to have Charles on them. I mean,
presumably from
currency.
Right now. They must do.
Well, presumably. This has all been, you know, it must be lined up. There's no doubt people working harder than ever this weekend. But, you know, going back to your clapping thing, and that, again, relates to our parents' generation, that she wasn't going to all those places because she wanted to go. She was going because it was her duty. And duty consists of doing loads of things you don't terribly want to do.
Yeah.
And just doing them the same way as if you did want to do them.
Yeah.
And that's something our parents' generation never questioned for a second. You know, when they talked about the war, you know, people have a tendency to talk about, was your dad a hero in the war or whatever? Or was your mother a hero? They weren't heroes. They did what they had. They did their bit, as they used to say, didn't they?
Absolutely. And never gave any impression as to whether they did that bit in a particularly valiant way or not. You know, they rarely talked about it. It was just a job and it happened and it's over.
Yeah. Whereas nowadays, you're supposed to... You know, you're very much... I'm sitting on the tube last night, listening, overhearing people's conversations. I think, oh, people do talk about themselves an awful lot, you know. You know, they're always... Everything in their personal lives is presented as a triumph of some kind.
Absolutely.
You know, or a tragedy of some kind, as if we're absolutely fascinated by their lives. And whereas the Queen, you didn't... Did you know anything about the Queen? Really? No. Do you really want to know opinions? Not really. It sort of didn't matter. That's my favourite fact about the Queen, which I learnt from watching a documentary about 10 years ago, that she never says hello when entering a room, and she never said goodbye.
Goodbye when leaving it.
Which I thought, yeah, and that makes perfect sense, because if you're the Queen, you walk into a room, you don't have to go, oh, hello, I'm the Queen. Yeah. Obviously, you're the Queen. The whole notion is a symbol has walked into this room, and a symbol is something we all recognise. And therefore, it would be ill-mannered of the symbol at the end to say, I'm now leaving the room. You know what I mean? You just do it. You just kind of materialise, and then you ooze in and you ooze out. That's kind of your job. But it's going to take some getting used to. And I was thinking about Helen Mirren when she said that, how did you play the Queen in The Queen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The film. And she said, I imagined her, she looks at the world through a pair of binoculars which turn the other way around. So,
very good.
So the world is there, but it's a long way away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thought that was...
I love that thing that they used to say about the Queen, that she must think the whole world smells of fresh paint.
Yeah.
Those little tiny images that give you some idea of what it'd be like to be her, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, she's... it's going to take some getting used to.
It really
And I
is.
Told... I actually, because my, you know... I've told you my story about meeting the Queen.
You've got to tell again, because I'm afraid to say I've told a lot of people that story. And it's brilliant.
I'm sorry. This is probably my last opportunity to tell this story. And I would be failing in my duty to posterity if I didn't tell this story. Because this was not long after we're at Word, and the Word office was in Islington, and the Obamas were visiting the UK for, I think, the first time. And Michelle Obama was due to visit a girls' school, which is very near our office. And so we were all quite excited, weren't we?
We all went out and watched the little fleet of limos arriving.
We all stood on the street with a load of, you know, Islington citizens thinking, look, we're going to get a glimpse of Michelle Obama. She's a bit of a star. That's very exciting. And, of course, the blacked-out people carriers swept round the street. Nobody saw Michelle Obama at all. They closed the school gates. That's your lot. Well, you know, not long afterwards, one evening in summer, I was crossing St. James's. I was going down from Green Park into St. James's Park. Lovely summer evening, probably only about 6:30 in the evening. And I was about to cross the Mall when a policeman nearby just said, hold on a second, would you mind, sir? So I stood there and I looked up towards the palace. It was quite near the palace. And I saw coming round the Victoria Monument or whatever they call that thing outside the palace, a large limousine, a large black car coming very slowly. And as it got nearer, I realised that's the crest on the top of it. And they only put the crest on the top of it when the Queen is at it. So I'm standing there on my own, apart from the copper, on the Mall, summer evening, and slowly comes past this car, in the back of which are the Queen and Prince Philip. And so I'm standing there on my own, and I think, well, you know, I'm a citizen. I've paid my taxes. I'm going to wave.
You probably didn't even think that consciously. You probably just, it's probably an automatic thing. You just start waving. It's the Queen.
I lifted my hand and did that kind of half-hearted wave. And they both looked at me and they both waved.
They both waved. Personal wave. There was
I thought to myself, the American presidency could learn an awful lot from that.
Oh, absolutely.
That if your job is a symbolic head of state, your job is to be seen. And when people wave at you, to wave back. You know what I mean? That's your role when it comes down to it. Your role is being there. You know what I mean? Of course, she's not there anymore.
The Today programme, Martha Kearney was out very early this morning, must be about, I don't know, 6:15 or something like that, in the dark, virtually in the rain, outside Buckingham Palace, reading random notes on the great, great ocean of kind of damp and fragrant flowers that have been left there. And it's interesting how many people said exactly the same thing. I saw her once and she waved at me. You know, and it, you know, that's part of, you know, what's kind of made that powerful connection with so many people, don't you think? It's the idea that she's always been on duty and always been on message.
Well, dropping a name, not long after that, I interviewed Paul McCartney, and I was talking to Paul McCartney about asking him about this business. You always wave and you always do the thumbs up. And I said, the only other person who's done that in my experience is the Queen.
Yeah.
And I think Paul McCartney kind of is a distant echo of that kind of thing. You know, he's a living symbol.
Well, he's a symbol, and when he meets people, he's got to leave them with just a little bit of an uplift, a little bit of a glimmer, doesn't he? And that's the best way to do it. Just keep moving and just, a cheery thumbs up.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.